At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Today's episode is with Katie Bulmer. Katie's podcast and speaking platform, Truth for Your 20s, were started in order to guide young women and be the person she needed when she was younger. Katie provides valuable insight on how to approach dating in today's world, including how to set realistic expectations and have constructive discussions about pornography. She explains the various forms of intimacy that can be present in relationships, whether romantic or not, and emphasizes that pornography is not a suitable replacement for genuine intimacy. With that, let's jump into the conversation. We hope you enjoy this episode of Consider Before Consuming.
Well, Katie, thank you so much for giving us some of your time today. We're so excited to talk with you on the Consider Before Consuming podcast. To get started, can you share with our audience who you are and the work that you do?
Sure. Thank you for having me. I am such a fan of Fight the New Drug. You guys are just doing great things in the world. So I'm thrilled to be here. My name is Katie. I wear a lot of hats, as I guess many of us do, but I am the host of the Truth for Your 20s podcast. I always say everything I do on the internet is to be who I needed when I was younger. I am a speaker to sororities. So oftentimes colleges and sororities specifically will book me to come be a speaker. So that's fun. I get to talk about sisterhood, making difference in the world, dating with dignity, dating with respect, all of that kind of stuff. I say changing the dating world, which is like, woo. And then of course, social media, doing the TikToks and the reels to make it interesting, funny, relatable, and hopefully dropping some truth bombs along the way. So that's a little bit about me. And we have two girls. My husband and I have been married for 19 years. We have two daughters and we live in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Amazing. As you mentioned, you mostly speak to young women, sororities. How did you land on that particular audience?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a like winding road, but I guess, I mean, my story is just kind of, you know, I felt like I was very much a wallflower, I guess you could say, growing up. You know, my parents were divorced. I wasn't really involved in church or in sports. I just didn't really find my people, actually, until I came to college. And I didn't go through sorority recruitment. That was like not on my radar, but I got a snap bid. There's people who even know what that is, but essentially a sorority came and knocked on my door with the balloons and the clapping and, do you want to be a part? And I told them no. But I think that obviously this was supposed to be part of my story. I had who would later become my big sister come and convince me that I needed to do this. And I understand sororities have a bad rap. They think, you know, it's big girls with whatever big hair girls is what I'm trying to say. Big hair girls with funny t-shirts and theme parties. And yes, but for me, it was the first opportunity belonging to something bigger than myself. It was a sisterhood. It was a place to belong. It was letters on my chest that meant something. It was a family. And I guess you could say that was the birthplace. And so now, you know, I talk to other women about how this collective group of women can do great things in the world. I, along this journey, also was dating my fair share of bad decisions and learned some things, you know, through the school of hard knocks. Thankfully married a great man and realized the difference and want to speak to younger women like, hey, this is how to date differently. This is how to teach others how to treat you and all that kind of good stuff. So that's the short version of the story.
Amazing. And what really inspired you to start sharing those experiences with a broader audience?
I think it just kind of, I didn't really set out to be a speaker. I was very shy in school. I you know, people say I talk really fast and I'm from the South, so I don't really feel like I have a voice for all this kind of stuff. But, you know, we just kind of get where we're supposed to be in life. I feel like I kind of served as an advisor for my sorority and just reluctantly, you know, not really knowing what I'm doing, I was also a yoga instructor at this point and taught a yoga class. I had a girl come up to me and say, "Hey, can you come to a yoga class for our sorority?" And I was like, "I mean, sure." And I did it. And then the president of the sorority happened to come, and she liked me, and she started coming to my class at the gym. And all along, I kind of had this passion. So my background is in marketing. I'm kind of like so many different Genesis moments of how I got to do what I'm doing. I'm kind of skipping around here, but my background's in marketing. So this whole time, after graduation, I was a marketing major. My first job was in TV. I worked in TV commercials, radio, promotional products advertising, social media advertising. Like, that's my jam. That's my world. And really and truly, and I could talk about this for days, but 18 to 24-year-old women have trend-setting power. I mean, it's just the facts. You can look at what is, look, Taylor Swift. Hello. That's a great example. She's as big as she is for a lot of reasons, but 18 to 24-year-old women can change the world. Like, what's trending, what people download, what they wear. This is a huge consumer demographic. I empower young women to, first of all, know this and use this power for good. So I think your question was, how did I start doing this? I just started talking, to girls about it. When I talk about sharing that yoga class, the president came to me, we got to be friends, and I told her that kind of shyly, like, as a marketing background, I see the power in young women, very shyly, passively sharing my passion. And she was like, "Yeah, well, why don't you come talk to our sorority about this next week? You got 15 minutes at the end of our chapter meeting to talk to 225 girls." I think I almost wet myself. That was my very first speaking opportunity. I couldn't tell you what I said, but I had girls come up to me later and say, like, "You should be a motivational speaker. Oh my gosh, this is so powerful." And I'm like, "Alrighty then, maybe I should take this seriously." So that was another, I guess you could say, beginning moment of kind of doing what I'm doing, and all of that boiled together. Now that was, later I had the podcast, the speaking, all of the things kind of come together because of all of that background, stirred in a pot and baked in the oven, and here we are today.
So amazing. So obviously on the Consider Before Consuming podcast with Faith in a Drug, we are going to talk a bit about pornography today. But before we talk about pornography and dating and relationships, I just want to talk with you about some kind of general dating questions about dating. So obviously dating can be challenging for any young individuals. Do you have any advice on maintaining healthy self-esteem while navigating kind of the ups and downs of dating?
Yeah, I mean, your self-worth is everything, right? Because if we have a poor self-worth and we're like, "Oh, well, with that girl's example, we talked about, this is the best I can get. Well, I guess it's okay that he treats me like that, that I'm second place." And by the way, this guy had other girls that he would date and then call her. It's terrible. So that is based, that root problem is in your self-worth. So, I mean, how to keep that up? I think that having a relationship with a higher power is important. I think having people in your life that speak truth to you, that hold you to a higher standard. I talk about this a lot when I go to sororities, that, founding sisters of sororities, but really any group, or just think about, if you think about your own friendships, if you were to write down what you want this to look like, it's not a group of people who encourage you to make bad decisions. "Oh, it's okay, honey, eat that third donut. Oh, it's okay, honey, watch Netflix instead of studying for," like, I get that. That sounds cute, but really you want friends to hold you to a higher standard. That's the good and the bad and the beauty of good friendship. And coming back to self-worth, I mean, I hope that I have people in my life that give me a friendly, like, "What the heck are you thinking if I'm doing something stupid?" Right? Because sometimes what do they say? Like, you can't see if you're in the mayonnaise jar, that kind of saying, like, if you're something like, you can't see your own life sometimes. You need someone outsider looking in, especially when it comes to dating. Because, and I have a lot of, stats on science and how we bond with people, especially if there's sexual chemistry or there's something, if there's been a sexual bond, then sometimes we are bonded to people more, and it's harder to see that this is maybe a toxic relationship. Emotions cloud your judgment as well, infatuation. And so if you have all of this clouding your judgment, this is why the whole friend group can see, what in the heck is this two couple thinking? Like, they are terrible for each other. They're toxic. Everyone's talking about how bad they are, but the couple themselves can't see it because of all of those clouded things that cloud your judgment. So, self-worth. You have friends that be like, "Listen, sister, listen, brother. No, like, this is not good for you. I love you too much to let you stay here. I love you too much. You're not the same person. You're not who you're not the person I love. You're not the person that I see in you because you're clouded by judgment, whatever the reason, but I see better in you and I want to hold you to a higher standard. So
what are some red flags or warning signs that young people should be aware of when engaging in online dating?
Oh, online dating. I'm not against online dating. I think it's a tool, right? It's just like anything else. You know, a brick can be used to crush a window or build a house. It's in the hands of the user that makes all the difference. The one thing I always say is clearly communicate what is important to you. Clarity is kindness is a fun little thing that you can replay in your mind over and over again. So some red flags. I mean, I think before you get into dating, before you get into lost into cuteness and blue eyes and cologne or whatever it may be, write down what matters to you. Write down your values, because then it is just easier than getting clouded by emotions. Like we said earlier, emotions, infatuation, physical intimacy definitely clouds your judgment. So if you can just write down what matters, and then if you get a little bit clouded, oh, you know what? I said that this matters to me and this is not happening in this relationship. That is a red flag. And then ask people close to you, like we just talked about as well, and listen to what they have to say. Sometimes you have to say, what do you see on the other side of this relationship? That is powerful, sometimes hard. Ask someone that you know that loves you and wants your best interest at heart. And again, listen, which is sometimes the hardest part. So writing it down with a clear mind and then listening to other people's feedback, because they're on the other side looking in, I think are two very powerful things, ways to avoid your red flags.
In your content, you talk about how setting realistic expectations is important. What advice do you have for young people in terms of establishing healthy expectations when entering a new relationship? So healthy expectations around those things they've written down as what they're interested in a relationship.
Yeah. So when I go to sororities, I have to do this. I get like a dry erase board. I'm like, give me characteristics that matter to you in a dating relationship. And it's funny, I've been able to go to 70 colleges at this point, all over the nation. You know, doesn't matter where they are, they almost always say the same things. And it's like responsible, kind, hardworking, funny, like whatever. And that's great. But this person, responsible, may matter more to her than another girl who says a good sense of humor or whatever it may be. And I think, again, just having that list, the non-negotiables, if you will. I think that having a shared faith is important. I think that being on the same page financially is important. These are what I think, but does this matter to you? Does this matter to the person on the other end of your earbuds? And if it does, stop settling. Stop saying, yes, I want a shared faith. And then just pretend that doesn't matter just because he has blue eyes, right? Stop saying, I want, finances to be in order. And then start dating someone $50,000 in debt. Like, and again, I will say it matters more of where they're going than where they are. I talked to a girl who was dating a guy, like he lived at home. He was in between jobs. Some things that maybe don't seem good on paper, right? But he was finishing his career. He was very driven. Now he is he has his master's degree and has a very successful job. And so he was on a good path, currently not in a good place. So worry more about where they're going than where they are. So, you know, we have these red flags of, oh, they live with their mom. So maybe they're saving money. Maybe that's a financially good decision. Like, we don't have to just stigma around certain things around life. It just depends on where they're going, not necessarily where they are.
So in the beginning of a relationship, there are those certain non-negotiables, right? The things that are the most important to you. How can young people navigate those conversations, particularly and specifically around pornography in a relationship?
Goodness. Yeah, I think that, as of course you guys know, that watching porn is certainly damaging to a relationship. I think that it needs to be a conversation, you know, probably not a first date, but sooner than later. How do you feel about it? You know, do you have experience? Is this something that you, do you have a problem? Of course, you're probably going to not admit a problem on the day one, but having a conversation about pornography in the world that we live in is something that needs to happen. And I realize that this is not comfortable. I realize this is not like, what's your favorite ice cream, you know, but I mean, my word, what's better, to avoid it and then to be married for 15 years in a toxic marriage where someone is choosing fake images on the internet besides your family? Like, that's so painful. And to not have that conversation earlier is certainly because it's awkward. Like, what a bad trade, you know? So sooner than later, I think that it needs to have a conversation. And so since you mentioned non-negotiables, as I'm sure your podcast talks about, I would definitely say it's a non-negotiable. Now, again, not necessarily where they are, but where they're going. Maybe someone who has had a tendency to look, or someone who thinks it's not a problem, or has thought in the past, I should say, that it's not a problem, but realizes it. Getting the resources from Find the New Drug, on a path to recovery, having accountability, wonderful. Probably even more amazing than someone who says they've never had a problem because they have recognized it. They have dove in those waters, but they are like, no more. I want better. I want clean eyes. You know, like that is beautiful. I think that, again, so not necessarily where they're going, I mean, where they are, but where they're going, and just having that conversation. You know, sometimes I just write it down. I say this is my weekly thing. Every Wednesday is my day of doing hard things. It sounds silly, but like the day you gotta look up the insurance stuff that you don't want to, the day you gotta like run the errands that you're put, like, there's just a day of the week to get the crap done that you don't want to get done. Maybe you're dating this person, it seems good, like everything, but you need to have a conversation. Just write it down. Today's the day we're gonna talk about it. And you can say, like, I know this is weird. I don't want to talk about it. You don't want to talk about it. But here's the deal. This is important to me. I want this to be important to you too. Porn. Let's talk about it. You know?
If someone were in a situation where they bring up porn as a non-negotiable, they say, this is not something I'm interested in my relationship, and the person they're dating says, oh, I don't have a problem with porn, that doesn't matter to me, what would your advice be to that?
I would say that's interesting. You know, I feel differently. I maybe point to what you're learning. Say, I listened to this podcast, I watched this video, and start having a conversation about it, depending on how invested you are in this relationship, depending on how, maybe they just don't know. Maybe they just need to be educated on how damaging it is, because it is. And we know this now. You have the science and the stats and so much psychology behind why it certainly is. And so maybe it's just an education issue. If it continues to be like, whatever, I don't believe that, I'm the exception, I'm fine, then that needs to be reevaluating if you want to stay in this relationship. Because that, again, you know, no, you have this, that's, there's not a good thing in the world that's going to come from a long-term relationship. And maybe the person's going to say, oh, well, I'll quit when I get married, or I'll quit. No, you won't. When you get married and you walk down the aisle, someone wears a tux, someone wears a dress, you get your friends and your family, you spend a lot of money, and you throw a party. It's lovely, but you don't magically change habits. So that requires work.
So with regard to, we had just talked about hookup culture, how have you seen pornography's influence, just the content that today's mainstream pornography is, influence dating culture today?
It's so everywhere and it's so sad. I think that, you know, one thing I say when I go to colleges is no one wants to hear from their future boyfriend. I just talk to women, so we're going to say boyfriend here, but no one wants to hear from their future boyfriend, hey, babe, I'm a sex expert. Like, congratulations. Are there trophies for that? Like, okay. What you want to hear is, I want to be an expert on you, right? Because this intimacy, this look at every romantic movie, every romantic song, like, I will climb the highest mountain for you and you alone. Like, this is the idea that we crave. And so pornography is just experience, if you will. It's comparison. It's, well, you're a little taller, a little shorter, a little wilder, a little quiet. Like, what? I want to be just your definition of beauty. I want to be your definition of the best girl, the best guy. And pornography doesn't help that. It just doesn't. You can't convince me that's helpful. You know, it's just more and more comparison, and more ways to fail, way more and more ways to not measure up. And who wants that? So how I've seen it impact dating is in those ways. There's so much more choices already in our culture. You know, we look back at the way our grandparents dated, and they had a crush on someone they went to high school with, and they probably lived 50 years together married, you know. And of course, there were problems back then as well. But I think it's so ironic. Now we have thousands of options to swipe through and swipe and keep swiping. And just more comparison, and someone else who, like, anytime something gets a little not right, you just keep swiping and keep swiping, and no one's ever enough. And no amount of options is enough. And we just keep searching for this better and better and better. It's so unfair and untrue and unrealistic. And, you know, no one wants to be compared, yet that's what we do on the other side of it.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
So what advice would you give your future son or daughter about dating? Would it be to go look at pornography to figure out how to date well? No, right? So if you wouldn't tell your future son or daughter that, then why in the world would you do that? So that'll kind of put things in perspective.
I wanted to ask you about, we often hear from people, both men and women, who are single and say, well, I'm not in a relationship, so pornography is the only option for me right now. And how would you respond to someone who is in that position?
No, it's not. Why would you say that? First of all, being single is a beautiful stage. Don't wish it away. You are learning, you are growing, you are becoming who are you meant to be in this stage. It is not the only option. You know, it feels like it's going to help, but it just is a cheap substitute for what you really want and what you really crave. And it's just not going to help you at all. I understand this might be hard. I understand that, you know, we all have needs and desires and stuff like that. Go for a run. Pick up a new hobby. There are so many ways to better yourself, better your brain.
What are some ways people can achieve those other forms of intimacy besides physical intimacy, especially in a season maybe where they're single?
Yeah. Okay. So I can remember all of these, but mental, emotional, spiritual, and social. Mental is when you kind of geek out over something, like if, say you're really into marine biology, I don't know. And so you find someone else, oh, that's really cool. I'm a big into Taylor Swift stuff. And so like someone says, oh, that's Easter eggs. And I'm like, oh yeah, me too. And it's song lyrics and whatever. So that's kind of your mental intimacy. And you kind of have that bond there. Emotional. These are, you know, of course your feelings. You have things that you love, things that light you on fire. Maybe you're really passionate about something else. Spiritual is your shared faith, and that's important. Social, you know, going out. Some people like to go to different bars or go to, I don't know. There's so many different ways to do social intimacy. And it doesn't mean you have to be a social butterfly. It just means that's how you connect. That's how you bond. When I miss one, mental, emotional, spiritual, social, and then physical, of course, we say just the, and that could be hand holding, that could be a touch of the arm. It doesn't have to be in the sheets or anything, but yeah, there's so many different forms, and Google that, because I know I just kind of give it a brief synopsis, but there's definitely different ways to get intimacy. But I mean, think about, even if you just go to the park and you're surrounded in nature, and maybe you have a social bond there, an emotional bond, because the weather's nice and the breeze is in your face. And there's just so many different ways to explore life and share a bond with someone versus having sex. I'll just say it.
Yeah, and also noting that pornography is kind of a synthetic substitute for intimacy, right? It's, you're with a screen, essentially, and you're being bonded to a screen, and that's not true intimacy in the sense that we're talking about in a healthy relationship.
Right. Yeah, it's not even physical intimacy. It's not even what you're hoping for. It's just a cheap substitute. And what a shame. That's so sad to not get the real thing.
We often hear from young people who are in a dating situation, and, you know, they'll be on a first date. And a story I'll never forget is one where a young boy and a young girl were on their first date. He went to kiss her and he choked her. And he truly didn't know he had done something wrong, because he said, well, I thought that's what she wanted, because that is what he had learned from pornography. So we see often situations like this where what individuals are being taught from mainstream pornography is not a realistic portrayal of healthy intimacy in a relationship, right? And that's something to keep in mind as well when someone's endlessly swiping through options, not just of different types of people, but different scenarios that are not realistic. It changes the way that we think about our partners. And I think that's really important for young people who are dating to recognize.
Yeah, for sure. Oh my word. That's and they didn't even genuinely realize how bad that was because the
Yeah.
picture they've been given of love really is so twisted and unhealthy, and that's very sad.
How would you, for someone who's looking earlier, you said don't settle. And also now we're talking about we live in a society where between pornography or dating apps, you can swipe through endless options. How would you advise someone to make sure they're not settling, but also not always looking for the grass is greener next thing? There's got to be another bigger, better option. So you mentioned it's more important to focus on where someone's going, not where they've been. So specifically with regard to a habit with pornography, if someone is pursuing change, if they have a compulsive pornography habit, that's a good thing. What advice would you have to make sure someone won't fall for the potential of someone or the idea that they might change without actually seeing the change? How would you advise someone to kind of navigate that?
Oh, so there are no guarantees in life. I wish that there were. I don't know that I have a guarantee for this answer. This is a little bit of relationships are always a little bit of a risk, right? We're all flawed humans who are, I always say we're all one decision away from stupid, right? And so while someone who may have had a porn addiction who's seeking help and getting well, that's great. How can you guarantee it? Of course, you can't, but maybe just looking at other areas of their life. Are they disciplined with working out? Is this something that matters to them? And they show up and continually want to better themselves in that way. Maybe they have a habit of, I don't want to watch TV on the weekends. Like, it doesn't matter. Do they have a morning routine? Are they passionate about eating healthy? There's not like a right or wrong answer here, but looking at their life as a whole. My husband ran a few half marathons, and I learned so much just being a bystander for someone who that is no joke work right there, right? In the heat, in the cold, in the rain, he would get up every Saturday, and those were his long run days, and sometimes run like 10 miles. I'm like, no, thank you. He would say too, it wasn't fun. It wasn't something that like he, oh, hot diggity dog, I get to run 10 miles today, but something that he continued to show up to do. So get him to run marathons. I'm just kidding. That's not a guarantee, of course, but that is a character trait that I admired in him as a bystander, looking at that just tenacity and determination to continue to do something even when it was hard. It was very inspiring for me to watch, and I'm sure that those characteristics, I think, bleed into so many areas of life. So perhaps that answers your question. Again, there's no guarantees, but it's certainly helpful.
Yeah, so maybe with regard to pornography or another, habit that someone may be looking to improve, looking at their actions as opposed to just their words and seeing if they're actually working toward that improvement, it sounds like. And for someone who maybe is a partner of someone who is struggling with pornography, who chooses to support them as they overcome that struggle, would you have advice for that partner to make sure they're taking care of themselves through that process, whether it's pornography or something else?
I like that they said taking care of themselves because obviously you want to support them, and that's a part of the conversation as well. But supporting themselves, I think that as the person getting free or working through the addiction needs accountability, needs people. We are creatures who need other humans around us. We thrive in community. There's so much research about that. And so making sure you have someone as well. It doesn't need to be 20 people, but at least one other person that you can share what you're going through because it's sticky. And that I know that that's a hard season and you might feel embarrassed, but we had a friend who it was a couple who went through this struggle, and the husband was struggling with pornography, and they were very private about it. They didn't say anything. It was very shameful. Unfortunately, they did not stand the test of time and they're divorced. And we have another couple, very similar circumstances, and we're much more open about it, shared about it, got accountability, brought it into the light. And they are still here and sharing their story and sharing it with other people. And now, of course, there's a million other circumstances, but I think that when we bring our mess into the light, when we can share it with others, when mess is in a basement, it like grows horns and gets uglier and yuckier. But when you're able to like just shine light on it, again, it's not fun. And I get that that's painful, but it is less powerful in the dark when it's in the light and it can be shared with others. And you also have people to share that burden with you.
Yeah, that's great advice. They say addiction thrives in secrecy, right? Or compulsive behaviors thrive in secrecy. And so being able to break that stigma, that's part of why we're here having this conversation, to remove the taboo around this topic, to know that it's something that a lot of people struggle with and also a lot of people overcome, right? There's a lot of hope to be had in overcoming a struggle with pornography or being able to overcome that in a relationship as well.
Yeah, for sure.
How would you, for someone who's looking, earlier you said, don't settle. And also now we're talking about, we live in a society where between pornography or dating apps, you can swipe through endless options. How would you advise someone to make sure they're not settling, but also not always looking for the grass is greener next thing? There's got to be another bigger, better option.
Yeah, I did a podcast episode on this. It's the dichotomy of don't settle, you know, decide what matters to you and don't settle, but also be realistic. On the be realistic side, I talked to a girl who she called me. She was so frazzled. She thought she found this wonderful guy, and he knows that her favorite flower is tulips, but he bought her daisies. And I'm like, he bought you flowers. So you need to just chill out. So there is this dichotomy, right? Of never settle and also get your head out of the clouds. I always say you need to be who you're looking for is looking for. If you think physical fitness is important, but your favorite activities are eating Cheetos and never leaving the couch, that could be a problem. If your favorite, thing to do on a Sunday is go to church and the person you're dating, you know, wants nothing to do with that, that could be a problem. If you want to move to Barbados and explore the world and your favorite and the person you like wants to live on his grandma's property, like these are just things that you need to talk about. These are, you know, important conversations, but getting back to, I guess I would say your non-negotiables, what matters to you? Pornography, it should matter to you. You decide, we talked about that earlier, but you get to decide and then don't settle on those. But I would make a super long list. I'm not saying he has to be 6'3". I'm sorry. I keep saying, you know, I talk to young women all the time, whoever I'm dating must be this certain height, must have this certain color eyes. Like that's small fries. I don't think that's a big deal. I would make some non-negotiables, but then the rest, just be open and just be, you know, sometimes people say, girls will tell me, oh, there's no good guys out there. I'm like, I'm pretty sure you were just telling me about a really awesome guy, but he wasn't 6'3". So hello there. And also I hear, well, there's no good guys or girls out there. Well, have you gone out there? You know, are you expecting them just to knock on your door? You have to go to networking events. You have to meet people. You have to say, hi, I haven't met you. My name is Katie. You know, I understand this might be awkward, but that's what you have to do to meet other humans. Our culture teaches, you know, you go to school, you go to college, you're surrounded by peers with, you know, probably shared interests, people who live in your geographic location. And then you get out of that, you might work from home and, you know, not do anything and not meet anyone. And then it's on you to look at the calendar in your town, go to the events, sign up to the chamber events, go to the park, introduce yourself, get a dog because they help you meet people when you're in the park. I don't know, but whatever the case, that's on you, boo. You know, that's on you to start meeting people. So I know I'm kind of all over the place, but the dichotomy of having high standards versus being realistic, I wouldn't say there's a perfect balance, but you just got to look and decide what matters, make your non-negotiables, and also be open to what that might look like once those non-negotiables are met.
That's great. Thank you. As a parent, how do you approach conversations with your children about digital safety and pornography, especially as they're approaching and maybe even in dating age? I can't remember how old you said your daughters are.
No, that's okay. Yeah, they are 14 and 16. So we are right there. We have not had boyfriends yet. So my plan is to lock them in a dungeon until they're 25 and pick out their mate. But in case that doesn't work out. No. So our oldest just got social media this year. I love social media. I'm on it all the time. I see the good in it. Of course, we see the bad in it as well. And so when we had the conversation, we said all of those things. Like, this is a tool. As we talked about the brick earlier, it can be used for good. It can be used for bad. We we have just one social media platform. We talk about what you could find on the search bar by accident, what to say if you do find something like that. We had actually a kind of a trial by fire experience. One of her friends spent the night with her, and she doesn't have a phone, the friend who spent the night. And while my daughter was asleep, got her phone and met someone on Instagram, fell in love, like all through, like through the night, like having this conversation. And I'm like, what? So of course the mom was concerned and we had a lot of talk, but because my daughter saw all of that happen, it was obviously a door for a conversation and why we don't fall in love with people we just meet on Instagram and what this means and how to have these conversations and potentially what could show up in your DMs and how to handle that and where the block button is. And so I think I always say when it comes to talking about anything with your kid, it's not a talk, as we say, you know, the quote talk, I'm going to have it. It's a conversation and it's ongoing. And I don't shy away when those conversations come up. I get it though. At first I'd understand how it was awkward and I could see how parents could be like, oh, I don't want to talk about sex. I don't want to talk about porn. But now I get excited if it somehow comes up, because then we just, well, yeah, what did you hear about this and the stat? And can you believe how, what pornography is doing to kids? And like, I never close the door. You know, a lot of parents will be like, oh yeah. Anyway, moving on. What about the weather? Like, I'm like, oh good. A rabbit trail that we can talk more about it. So early, open, and honest are the ways I think that you should have these conversations. Don't shy away from them. And, you know, realize that they are humans just like we are, and they might make mistakes. And if that happens, to meet it with grace, to meet it with education, to meet it with, I'm on your side, not like you're punished and you're wrong and you're, you know, doomed for the world. You are loved and you are welcome in this family and you are learning, and here's what we need to do next time. So those are the kind of conversations we hope, we know we have, and we hope to continue to have with our girls.
Yeah. Is there anything else we haven't covered yet that you want to share before we wrap up?
I am just such a fan of Fight the New Drug and what you guys are doing. I first heard about you, actually. I alluded to my PhD friend who taught me all the things about science, and he's like, have you heard of Fight the New Drug? And I hadn't at the time. And I'm so thankful that he introduced me, because you guys are really doing great things in the world. And yeah, I'm just over here cheering you on and thankful for what you're doing. And so thankful to be a part of this podcast. So thank you for having me.
Thank you so much, Katie. We're really grateful for your time. You have great resources about dating, especially navigating things like pornography in the dating scene today. So we really appreciate you making some time for us. And we hope our listeners will check out your resources.
Thank you.
Celebrate 15 years of Fight the New Drug with us. We want to thank you for your support and for being a part of our community these past 15 years. In celebration of our 15th anniversary, we want to give back to you with an epic giveaway. We're giving away an epic collection of exclusive FT&D conversation starting gear, documentary releases, a fully paid presentation, and more to commemorate our 15th anniversary. Join the celebration by entering the giveaway at ftnd.org/15 years. Want more chances to win? Score additional entries by donating, completing community challenges, and more. Don't miss out on this exciting opportunity to be a part of the movement against the harms of porn. Act now and join us in making a positive impact. Enter at ftnd.org/15 years. That's ftnd.org/15 years. Fight the New Drug celebrates 15 years of impact. Join us in reflecting on the incredible journey of the past 15 years. Visit our anniversary landing page at ftnd.org/15 years to explore our achievements, access exclusive resources, enter our giveaway, hear inspiring stories from fellow fighters, participate in social media giveaways, and join our month-long challenge series. Thank you for being a part of the movement against the harms of porn. Here's to 15 more years of making a difference. Thanks for joining us on this episode of Consider Before Consuming. Consider Before Consuming is brought to you by Fight the New Drug. Fight the New Drug is a non-religious and a non-legislative organization that exists to provide individuals the opportunity to make an informed decision regarding pornography by raising awareness on its harmful effects, using only science, facts, and personal accounts. Check out the episode notes for resources mentioned in this episode. If you find this podcast helpful, please consider subscribing and leaving a review. Consider Before Consuming is made possible by listeners like you. If you'd like to support Consider Before Consuming, you can make a one-time or recurring donation of any amount at ftnd.org/support. That's ftnd.org/support. Thanks again for listening. We invite you to increase your self-awareness, look both ways, check your blind spots, and consider before consuming.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.